This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today we've got a phenomenal episode. We have the president and CEO of Downtown Vancouver Business Improvement Association, Mr. Charles Gauthier.
Mr. Charles Gauthier, he's been in that role since 1992. He has seen some significant changes.
Yes.
Significant changes in Vancouver over his tenure.
Huge changes. Huge.
Yeah.
Like, he watched it all and he was involved in it in a role that has evolved from one of, like, I think just kind of monitoring, helping out with businesses, to being now the CEO and president of one of the largest, if not the largest, BIAs, I think, in the country.
Yeah, Business Improvement Associations. He's definitely one of the largest. And
for sure,
you know, he kind of mentions it, right? When other downtown business improvement associations look at Vancouver, they're often jealous.
They are jealous of the BIG. This is the thing, though. He's from Winnipeg as well.
He is.
Which is kind of interesting. Glad he made the move, I'm sure, potentially. Maybe he misses it. One thing's for sure, knows how to make a snowball and probably
duck a punch once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. What do we got to do before this conversation? We've got a few things we got to pick up on.
One thing we should talk about the conversation. Stay tuned, because we're talking pain points, COVID-19, obviously. What does this recovery look like? How fast is it? What is he optimistic about? It's a great conversation, very timely for sure. But before we get to our talk with Charles, we got a few things.
Yes.
One, we are still hiring.
We are still
at
hiring.
Scalina Real Estate, we are hiring. We would like anyone interested, especially people that listen to the podcast, please get in touch at info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. We are looking for somebody, an aspiring licensee, somebody who's getting their real estate license soon or got it recently or is looking to make a change. We'd like to talk to you.
Sure.
Please get in touch, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Absolutely, Matt. And we should talk about CMHC, because that was the interesting news that happened yesterday,
right.
Actually.
Yeah.
We're
hiring while Evan Sedell is predicting the country's economy is about to collapse.
Tore a strip off the Canadian real estate market.
I think it's about debt levels. I think the main thing here is about debt levels across Canada. That's for sure.
Just slapping hands with a ruler. he was, so here's a couple things that came out of that was,
as many as 20% of mortgages could go into arrears if the Canadian economy does not improve. That's one thing. Second thing, CMHC sees house prices declining between 9 and 18%
in the next
12 months. That's substantial.
Yeah.
But I mean, we need to, you know, and the last point, I guess I'll just highlight quickly is that they're considering increasing mortgage down payments for insured mortgages from 5% up to 10%.
Yeah. Which this is all very interesting, right? And I think it's again, and we've said this before, market specific, right? One, I don't think I'm trying to remember the last time I dealt with a client who was only putting 5% down in Vancouver. I don't know if that's as prevalent here as it is in other markets.
Yeah.
But I mean, psychologically, that's not a great thing. Tightening up mortgage rules is never great for any real estate market in terms of just transactions, turnover, that type of thing. But more importantly and more to the point here, I think, not great news for the Canadian real estate writ large, but that's a fairly broad brush Evan Siddall's painting with, of course.
Yeah.
And we always, I mean, we don't even talk about Vancouver. We talk about submarkets within Vancouver, and there's some wild fluctuations in how these markets are doing. So submarket specific.
It's the skin of the onion concept, right?
Right.
We dive deep here. And if you are like, there's a lot of activity in a lot of submarkets and sub price points in Vancouver. And in fact, I was in two multiple offer situations this week. I will probably be in more in the coming weeks. And I think you're probably in the same boat as me. It is definitely busy still in a lot of submarkets in Vancouver. So I wouldn't apply the whole to the part, nor the part to the whole.
Figure that one out.
Yeah.
But seriously, if you want to understand more about where you live or where you're looking to buy, get in touch, because we'd love to talk to people about the submarkets.
Sure.
You might be surprised. The information is very specific that we have, and we can definitely help.
Absolutely, Matt. And before we get to our conversation, we do have to mention we are sponsored by Oakwin Realty, best brokerage in the game. Quick shout out to Oakwin, who's doing a fantastic job during this COVID-19 thing. So many seminars and resources and support.
I wonder if there's another brokerage out there that is doing a tenth of what Oakwin's doing in terms of education,
right,
resources, outreach, Zoom calls, that type of thing. It's been incredible. The level of energy. A lot of people took this time to just watch The Sopranos, and that's not what's going on at Oakland, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So if you're a new agent or looking to make a change, realtor out there right now, looking to make a change, a fresh start, head over to oakland.com/join and type in VRP 2020. There's a huge surprise.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like VREP 2020, but it's VRP 2020. Make sure you type that in. The surprise is massive. It's a massive secret, as some of us might call it. But
speaking of massive secrets, secret, get in touch.
No, he's actually, I actually just got
alert
from my fitness pal.
I also got that.
He's logged in 30 days in a row. He's going to be the best kept secret. some might say. Anyways, oakland.com/join VRP 2020. It's the place you want to be. Matt, do we have anything else before we cut to our interview with Charles?
I don't think we got anything else today. Let's talk with Charles Gauthier from Downtown Vancouver Business Improvement Association.
Yeah, we'll see you after the conversation. Okay, so we're here with Charles Gauthier, President and CEO of Downtown Vancouver Business Improvement Association. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing well, considering.
Right.
Yeah, well, you sound like you're a busy guy. Thanks so much for taking the time today to talk with us.
Yeah, you're welcome, and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, so Charles, maybe can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes. I've been with the organization for just over 28 years. So I arrived 2 years after it was established. And I did start off in the senior position that I'm in right now. It was called general manager, and became executive director, and then I was here long enough, and the board changed the title just because the organization has evolved so much during that time. When I arrived in 1992, I had two staffs, and we've now grown the organization to slightly over 30 staff, which includes our downtown ambassadors.
Wow.
And our downtown clean team, which is our most visible part of the program that the general public and our membership would see. So I've had a long run. And before that, I worked in Summerland for 2 years in a very similar role, but a smaller community. And then I started off my career in Winnipeg with a regional economic development corporation. And I did that for, I think that was almost 4 years. I've had a very diverse career in different cities, both large and small, and but always with a nonprofit organization.
And we were talking before we went live here, Charles, but originally from Winnipeg, as Adam and I am as well. You went to the University of Manitoba and graduated with a planning degree, correct?
Yes, a very small planning school, but one of the longest running planning schools in Canada. And it was a great program. It was a relatively small class. I think we were about a dozen in the master's program, and it provided us with a great opportunity to learn directly from the professors, and obviously with such a small group of classmates, really got to, delve into a variety of different topics and learn from each other. And we all came from different disciplines. We had people that were architects, and others that had were coming back to get their master's degree after being in the workforce for a number of years. I didn't do that. I just jumped from my bachelor program into the master's program, and started my career in 1986, which everyone was in Vancouver celebrating Expo 86, and I was just trying to get my first job in Winnipeg, which I landed sometime in the summer of that year. So I missed Expo 86.
Ah. I have one burning question. Are you a Jets fan or a Canucks fan?
I kind of cheer for both, but I'm going to cheer for the Canucks fans, for the Canucks when they're in town. I was actually set to go to the Canucks Jets game that was going to happen in the latter part of March, and then they got canceled.
We were both going to that game as well. I know it was
heartbreaking,
a tragedy. Yeah, as the week went on, and it seemed once the NBA canceled, ripped up my tickets.
Yeah, my twin nephews were going to come in from Kamloops for that game, and we would have seen them at the game. But it didn't happen. So we'll have to wait till next season or the season thereafter, whenever we get over this particular virus.
Right. And so you've been in the position with the Downtown Vancouver Business Improvement Association since 1992. So you've seen considerable change in Vancouver's downtown.
Oh, massive change. I was here when Larry Beasley was the chief planner with the city of Vancouver, and they were moving forward with their policy of increasing the number of housing on the downtown peninsula. That was really exciting time. And obviously the expo lands were being converted from being a site of the expo to being what we see today in terms of the high density residential. Certainly, for the course of the last 5 to 10 years, with the increase in the number of office buildings within the downtown, and more to come over the course of the next 3 to 4 years, with about 4 million new square feet of office space. It's just been phenomenal growth, in the downtown itself and in the city as a whole. And it's just been, really rewarding part of my career to play a small part. We're a business improvement association. We're not the developers, and we're not the ones that are actually building things, but certainly we're there to provide the support that we can also support their proposals. You know, developers have come to us with seeking our support as an organization for new office buildings and for new housing projects, and we've been there to support that. The new convention center that opened up just over 10 years ago, you know, we were part of that movement to get that convention center expanded. There's been a lot of projects that we've been involved as an organization, and yeah, I would say that I'm really proud to have been part of that.
It's kind of an incredible 28 years to be in the role that you've been in, for sure, with just how many changes in the Olympics and everything else. Can you maybe tell our listeners a little bit about kind of the nuts and bolts of what the association does? Like, who are your members and what the goals are?
Yeah, well, when I could roll the tape back a little bit further, this is the 50th year that the Business Improvement Association movement has been around. So, you know, had we not had this particular issue this year with coronavirus, back in Toronto, they would have probably done some big celebration to mark the anniversary of when the BIA movement was established. And it was established in Canada, and this movement is spread across the world. It's literally probably on every single continent with the exception of one, Antarctica. But it's basically a self-funding model where commercial building owners agree, and it's done through a variety of different processes, but they agree to contribute towards the organization itself. So in our case, we represent 90 blocks of the downtown area, which includes the Central Business District and Downtown South. And we're surrounded by smaller BIAs like the West End BI, Robson Street, Yale Town, Chinatown, Crosstown, and there's a few others there. Gastown, I missed that one. But we're 90 blocks, we're the largest one. And in that area, we have 7,000 businesses that are eligible to be members. They don't have to pay anything to belong because our funding is through a levy that's collected on all commercial properties within our district. And then we use that money to do all our programming, supporting our downtown ambassador program, our clean team program, all our marketing initiatives, all the advocacy work we do, our economic development work, and all our placemaking work. So like bringing the different places and spaces, like the front plaza of the Vancouver Art Gallery, to life by sponsoring festivals and events that others put on. And then we do some of our own programming too. So we do a lot of work for that. And this year, our budget is about $5 million. So April 1st to March 31st of next year.
And Charles, you were saying that you currently have over, I believe, 30 staff members. And just to kind of gauge compared to, my understanding is there's 22 businesses, improvement associations in the Vancouver area. So would you be the largest then in downtown? And how does that compare to maybe some of the other associations?
Yes. Yeah, so we'll be one of the largest business improvement associations in Vancouver. The other BIAs, their budgets are going to be, you know, it'll be all over the map. But I think the nearest one to us will be about $1 million, $1.5 million in their annual budget. And they may not have more than two or three people on staff. Okay. And then they may contract out security services and cleaning services, like our clean team and our downtown ambassadors. And then in terms of throughout Canada, we're up there. We'll probably be, if not one of the largest with budgets and area that we represent, but we're pretty close to the top.
Right. And can you speak, a lot of our listeners are, live downtown. So they'll have their own sense of what the impact of COVID-19 has been, but can you speak a little bit about what impact, COVID-19 has had on the small business community in downtown and the vitality of downtown more generally?
Yeah, well, I'll speak about the second part of your question first. I mean, you know, a downtown that is kind of respected and the envy primarily in North America by a lot of my colleagues that run similar kind of organizations, you know, known for its vitality and known for the residents that live downtown and then the 140,000 people that work downtown each and every day, literally had the life sucked out of it, you know, with COVID-19. So it literally was a ghost town. I stayed here probably a little bit longer than I should have. I was trying to work here in the office. I'm back in the office now. It's my third week. But I tried to work an additional week, but it was literally breaking my heart to see, you know, a number of my favorite restaurants and coffee shops, you know, within my small circle of 2 to 3 blocks that I had become accustomed over the course of the last number of years that we've been in this particular office space, to see them boarded up and closed. And it was just becoming very difficult for me to watch that. So I made the decision on March 24th that I would be working from home for a duration of time. And then, of course, I was getting reports from my team. Some of my team wanted to continue to come to the office. And I was obviously seeing the reports on television in regards to what was going on. So that was hard to take because, you know, I know a lot of those small businesses and, you know, I got to know them. I would say on a personal basis and how much time and effort they put in growing their business, be it a coffee shop or a restaurant or a retail shop. And all of a sudden to get blindsided by something that none of us have experienced ever in our lifetimes was difficult. And then I would say we're still learning about, you know, what those impacts will be long-term to their bottom lines. And we're hopeful that many of them will continue to, will be able to get up back and running relatively soon and dealing with, I guess, the new normal. But we haven't quantified what that impact will be. We're actually working with a number of other groups to try to compile that information. And you're probably familiar with the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade and some other organizations right. have been doing surveys province-wide to try to get a better understanding of what the impact will be of COVID-19.
So I couldn't help but notice as I was driving through Yale Town yesterday, Charles, that some businesses seem to be opening, although very kind of restricted. Are we starting to see businesses up and running again, or how is this gonna play out over the coming weeks as the economy starts to slowly open up?
Yeah, so I just got some early results that I looked at this morning that are encouraging. So we're working with a number of tourism and hospitality organizations to try to gauge when businesses are going to reopen. And most of the results I looked at today were from businesses within our 90 block area. And I'm encouraged by what I saw. So many, I would say the vast majority of them are planning to open before the end of this month or early into next month. And I'm talking primarily about street level businesses and those in the hospitality and tourism sector. So that's encouraging news. And then, you know, we saw Pacific Center open up last week and then Hudson Bay opened up yesterday. The Apple Store in Pacific Center was scheduled to open today. And then Nordstrom is opening up on Thursday, tomorrow. And there are more and more businesses as I go on my walks now within my circle that I've talked about, the 2 to 3 block radius. And as I drive into work each day that are starting to open up, the hoardings are coming down from the businesses at the street level. So that's really encouraging news. And certainly what we need to see come back are the office workers, because they do support a lot of those street level retailers, the restaurants, just by their spending patterns, going out for lunch and doing some shopping during their breaks. So I think the recovery is going to be slow. You know, it will take time for us to get back, if we ever do get back to pre-COVID-19 circumstances. What I also think is that a lot of the retailers and restaurants will probably keep those models in place that they put up during the last 2 months in terms of offering takeout and curbside delivery. Because again, we, you know, from what we hear is that we might potentially get a second wave of COVID-19 in the fall. And for those businesses to be able to survive and thrive, they'll have to be more resilient and keep those platforms up and running.
It sounds like just in your kind of your circle, but also with all the businesses that are represented by your organization and what you guys do, like, are you expecting a lot of empty storefronts at the end of this, or in your conversations and kind of the data you're looking at, like how have your members fared so far?
Yeah, you know, I think it might be a bit too early to speculate, you know, what the outcome will be as a result of this. I think in part it's going to depend on whether or not the businesses have taken advantage of the federal programs that are available, the wage subsidies and the other supports that have been put in place. So if they've taken advantage of that, then I think that will be beneficial. I think it'll also depend on all the different marketing campaigns that will be launched to encourage people to come back, because I think there will be individuals that will be concerned about whether or not it's safe to come back and go into restaurants and go back into retail shops. Mm-hmm. So I think the jury is still out in terms of, you know, what kind of comeback will we see? Again, we've never experienced anything like this in our lifetime. So I think it's a big question mark as to whether or not, you know, the survival rate, you know, what that will look like going forward. Mm-hmm. We'll do everything we can, working with partners, to try to provide a better outcome in terms of, you know, making sure that they can be successful. For example, you know, City of Vancouver last week just approved helping to expedite patios and outdoor eating spaces. And so my team is working hard to provide all kinds of assistance to our restaurants to be able to do that and take advantage of those programs. And then we've done a couple of meetings over Zoom over the last couple of weeks to help our retailers better learn best practices from those that have been operating during COVID-19 over the course of the last 2 months. So London Drugs, you know, big shout out to them. You know, they had a representative made available to us to do a Zoom call with retailers to share best practices, you know, what to do with any returned merchandise, you know, how do you isolate that, ensure that, you know, there's no potential for the virus to spread. You know, what do you need to put in place to make customers feel safe and comfortable when they come into your store? So we're doing everything we can to help facilitate a smooth reentry into the marketplace by informing and providing the best practices that are out there. But I think it is a big question mark, just getting back to your question as to, you know, I think it's anyone's guess, frankly, as to, you know, how well will they be able to survive this?
Well, one thing that strikes me is, you know, Adam and I are both in real estate, and this basically from May through about October, I feel like every weekend when you're trying to get to an open house, half of Vancouver is shut down for marathons, festivals of some kind. Like that's, but I mean that in the most positive way, right? Mm-hmm. And you were saying, like, in front of the art gallery, for instance, kind of putting on events, but that's the thing that you can't do, right? Like a lot of what you guys do is totally outside the parameters now.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, that's kind of our placemaking efforts that we do as an organization. We support 25 to 30 festivals and different events throughout each year. And with our new 10-year mandate that started on April 1st of this year, we were well prepared to launch all of that just prior to COVID-19, you know, arriving here on our shore. And so, we've had to rethink that because we've known, based on what we've done with festivals and events in the past, they bring thousands of people downtown that, you know, traditionally may not come downtown. They live elsewhere outside of the city, and they want to come here if there's something really special and unique happening. And then when they're here, they tend to go to the restaurants and the retailers. They kind of make a day out of it.
right.
and support our local economy. Or we're actually bringing people from further afield if it's an event that we're sponsoring, like the Jazz Festival or the BMO Marathon. So unfortunately, you know, that's not going to be in the cards for this year and potentially next year, based on, you know, how well we navigate COVID-19 and if we can actually find a vaccine and have it, you know, rolled out in a very efficient and quick way. So what we've now had to do, what we're now looking at doing is we're looking at developing some marketing campaigns that won't include festivals and events to bring people back downtown to explore downtown. And we're in discussions with some the hotel community specifically about how we can do that. We're not ready to disclose exactly what that's going to look like, but we're going to have to do different things to bring people back downtown because it is going to be a challenge for our restaurants and our retailers because we're not going to be able to do those festivals and events. And then we also know that international tourism is likely off the table for this year, definitely this summer. We won't have cruise ships. We won't have conventions potentially for a very long time.
Just thinking about Vancouver and kind of its uniqueness in at least the Canadian context and maybe the North American context in some ways, it seems like downtown Vancouver's downtown has the upper hand in a lot of ways because of how many residential towers there are and people living downtown, right? It's not necessarily a destination, but it's a place that people live. And yet it's so, shaped by, just as you said, tourism, international tourism, the cruise ship industry and things like that. Like, how do you think Vancouver is going to fare, best guess over the next 12 to 18 months in relation to kind of maybe more traditional downtowns across the country and maybe across North America?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I've always said that downtown Vancouver is quite diversified. Like, we don't all have all our eggs in one basket. You know, we're not a government city, if I can use that example, like Victoria or, you know, pick any other capital in our country. So we don't necessarily rely on that particular workforce, but we're quite diversified. You know, we have tourism, we have conventions. You know, we have we're the employment center of British Columbia. We have a strong residential population on the peninsula itself. And so I've always said that diversification is really our salvation because if one particular area is waning, then the balance of it could potentially support the downtown and its fortunes. I think what's happened here is that, you know, we've all been delivered a body blow by COVID-19, and the impact was immediate, and it affected everyone. And so that's going to be the challenging part is, you know, what is the road to recovery out of this? And, you know, there's a lot of smart people working on this, especially in the tourism and hospitality sector, and developing some campaigns to bring people back to explore, in particular, British Columbia, like discover your own province. And then certainly there's a focus on bringing Canadians to Vancouver, you know, get people doing road trips like I did as a kid, like every other summer. My parents would load us up in the car and it would take us 3 or 4 days to get to Vancouver to visit family here. So I'm thinking we can probably rely on, bringing people from elsewhere in Canada come to Vancouver. There's not a lot of time to do that. I mean, July and August are literally just around the corner. And I think the other thing is, you know, we've got a strong residential population here as well. And it's about, you know, getting them to do what they've always done is support the retail and the restaurants that are here in their own backyard and getting them more comfortable to go back out. And ensuring that they feel safe and comfortable doing that. And I think the early news that I'm hearing from some of our retailers is that, you know, they are starting to see people trickle back and doing some shopping. And there's a number of retailers in Pacific Center that are offering sales now, which I think is a good way to lure people back. But I think our tourism sector is going to take a while to bounce back. And depending on when they open up the borders and when do we feel safe to welcome Americans back up here, I think is definitely going to be a big question, Mark, for all of us. Like, when is it safe for Americans to come back to Vancouver to experience everything that we have to offer?
I'm just out of curiosity, Charles, have you seen an increase in crime downtown? And like, just imagining with fewer people downtown, with businesses empty, have you seen an uptick in crime? And also, have there been any lessons about how to maybe prevent crime? And if we do see a second wave?
Yeah. So we did see, like, immediately once we saw offices close down and retails and restaurants, and, you know, as we started to see less and less foot traffic as well, we were starting to get reports from our street level members that they were experiencing more commercial break and enters. Thankfully, I have a community safety senior manager on my team, and he had anticipated something like this. And so what we did is we added overnight security patrols, mobile patrols, and then we also communicated with the police department, which we have a great relationship with, and we were able to address it with VPD support within a week and a half, and we started to see then a reduction in commercial break and enters as a result of our efforts and those of the police. So that was an unfortunate byproduct, but again, the foresight of my senior manager of community safety paid dividends in terms of you know, making sure that it didn't get to a point that would have been you know, intolerable for our members. So that was really a good move on his part. And then we adjusted some of our other programs, and we also encouraged businesses at street level to take precautionary measures. They were boarding up their windows, they were removing merchandise, and taking a variety of other precautions.
Right. Yeah, we've noticed the murals downtown on Robson and kind of surrounding areas. Which, you know, seems to kind of add partly security, but partly we're seeing people walking around looking at them, kind of enjoying them as part of the cityscape now.
Yeah, that was, I think, something that we had not anticipated, you know, that there would have been as much hoarding up of the windows and the storefronts as we saw. But, you know, right away we knew that that was going to be a visual distraction and something that wouldn't be pleasant, you know, for people that were still around and walking in the downtown area. And so that was a great partnership that we had with the Vancouver Mural Festival and some other business improvement associations like Robson Street and South Granville to do that initiative. And it supported a number of local artists. And so, and then the response that we had from the community at large and media was really great. So, that was one of the silver linings of all this, is that, you know, it wasn't great to see storefronts boarded up and graffiti followed after that. And then quickly, you know, my team was able to respond, and we provided funding to make that happen.
We've talked a lot about resiliency on this podcast and kind of this new age of crises that we're kind of seem to be entering with global warming and everything else. We actually just had Jeb Brugman on the podcast who his comment was that COVID-19 is a dress rehearsal for what is potentially coming in kind of future years. Just out of curiosity, like, how have you guys been, your organization, how's it been preparing for future challenges, kind of moving forward?
Yeah, well, on climate change and sea levels rising, it has become a focus of ours as an organization. I mean, the small part that we can play, I mean, you know, we're not senior levels of government and we're not the city government, but, you know, we can do a small part to start to address it. So we do have a sustainability component of what we do as an organization. And We've supported a number of city initiatives to reduce the use of single-use items. We've supported a number of other initiatives that, you know, were controversial, like the expansion of the bike lanes, as an example, or support of electric vehicles and charging stations. You know, because that's definitely, you know, even though most of us don't think that's an item that would create controversy, or any of those items I mentioned would create controversy within our membership, they do, especially bike lanes. It's been a lightning rod over the course of the last 10 to 15 years. I would say less so now.
Right.
So we support a number of different initiatives and encourage our members to, you know, reduce single-use items, support bike lanes. We support our member businesses that have looked at adding end of trip facilities for cyclists, the Moby bike stations. I mean, there's a whole list of projects that we've come out in support of, and we've created great partnerships with organizations that play a much bigger role in starting to address climate change.
I was struck by earlier when you said, you know, if we get back to, basically the idea of a new normal, right? Like there might not be, we might not be going back to what life was in February. If you could just, and again, this is early days, nobody knows, but if there was one sort of big change you've thought of for downtown Vancouver over the next couple of years that might be a lasting impact, is there something that you can think of that you think, okay, this will, some component of our lives downtown is going to look very different?
Yeah, I think, you know, the one that stands out for me is how can we move downtown to becoming maybe a little bit less reliant on the private automobile. And we're going to have to adapt to this because, you know, we're going to have to keep these social distancing measures in place for a while. And, you know, I'm sure that we're all doing this is that, you know, we're trying to maintain that 2 meter distance from anyone that we're walking by on the street, as an example, in our sidewalks. Are not wide enough in a number of locations in our own BIA district, and so I think what we're going to have to do is maybe take away some of that road space to make it more pedestrian friendly and to provide opportunities for particularly our restaurants to be able to spill out into the streets, and that is a very live discussion that's happening right now at City Council in terms of doing that. And, you know, you look at Stanley Park as an example with, you know, making it more mobile friendly for cyclists and pedestrians. And as you know, there's a live discussion going on about keeping it car free.
Right.
So I think this is something that as a downtown organization, you know, we need to have a conversation with our membership about this and think about wider sidewalks and more outdoor space for a variety of different activities, be it dining or people just hanging out. So I think this will be a I wouldn't know if I would call it a lasting legacy of COVID-19, right. but I think it will be a byproduct of it going forward, because again, I think there is a potential of a second wave of the infection, but I think in the end it would be a positive outcome out of COVID-19 is if we were able to further make our downtown pedestrian friendly and make it more friendly for cyclists. And that is a statement I wouldn't have said 15 years ago, but I think it is something that that we should move towards.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like Gordon Price, I don't know if you follow.
Yeah, I do.
He's been on the podcast in the past, and his Price Tags blog has been talking a lot about that. And yeah, that could be, yeah, if there's any silver lining, I mean, that sounds incredible to kind of get those sidewalks widened up and those outdoor spaces and kind of not,
what's the word? Not be so beholden to automobiles it sounds like a positive in my mind.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, if I had a second one, I think it's the ability for businesses of all types, you know, to be able to adopt work from home. I don't think this is necessary. I don't think it's going to replace, you know, the need for office space. I think if anything, it will just provide people with more options. And, you know, I always thought, I hope I don't jinx anything here, but I always thought that downtown would be more impacted by an earthquake sometime during my career, and that hasn't happened. We got hit by the pandemic instead. But I was never set up to work from home. And certainly what brought home this issue to me was that I need to be able to work from home. And I have a laptop now that was all set up when I did leave on March 24th to work from home. And I can work from home now quite easily. And I was actually quite surprised of how productive I was. Not more productive than being in the office, but I was more productive than I actually thought I might be.
Right.
But I think that will be, I think a lot of people would have probably adjusted to the ability to work from home from time to time, but I think there'll still be a need for office space going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes one of us on this call who is more productive.
It's gonna say, it sounds like you don't have an 8-year-old.
We don't have children.
Maybe as a final question here, Charles, what can people do to help?
Yeah, well, and you know, it was interesting. I had a similar question after the 2011 Stanley Cup riot. I remember, I can't remember who the reporter was, but a reporter asked me, you know, what can we do to help the businesses that have been impacted back then by the riot? And the question, the way I would answer the question you just asked me right now is, you know, when you feel comfortable, is go out and support, you know, our street level businesses, our restaurants, our retailers. You know, come back and experience everything that downtown has to offer. I can assure your listeners that our businesses are very cognizant of people being potentially afraid, concerned that they might get infected by visiting these businesses, and they've taken every single precaution to avoid that from occurring. There's a lot of due diligence. They're following all the practices from WorkSafe BC. They're talking to each other, competitors talking to each other about, you know, what have you done to reduce the transmission of COVID-19. I would just say when you're safe to do it, our businesses are there to welcome you back.
Fantastic. We do have this quick segment called the Five Wire, five quick questions. Can you stick around for that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So question number one is, what is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
This might be political for you.
your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver. And if you want to plead the fifth.
My favorite neighborhood in Vancouver. You know, I would say the one I live in. So we live in Marple, and I don't know if you want to know why.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think I like it because I think it just, you know, it's very ethnically diverse. You know, a lot of local independent shops, close to the airport, close to the Fraser River. Yeah, and it's, you know, it gives me that. I really love downtown and what's here, but it's a good juxtaposition to, you know, to downtown, and just a nice, quiet neighborhood.
Favorite bar or restaurant, Charles?
There's several. That's probably a very diplomatic answer, but you know, Nightingale, I'd put at the top of the list, and Italian Kitchen would be there too. And Tractor would be another one for a lunch, you know, a healthy lunch.
Right. Yeah. Oh, Nightingale. That made me really miss restaurants. One book you would recommend that everyone should read?
Oh. Yeah, it is going to sound very, you know, primarily because I've managed not-for-profit organizations. And so I'm going to pick something from that field, but Reinventing Your Board by John Carver and Miriam Carver.
Huh. That's a new one.
So it's a book I literally have on my bookshelf. I have one of the other books by John Carver, Boards That Make a Difference. But these are two books that are within easy reach. And I often go back and read a certain chapter, but it's primarily because I work for a board of directors and I'm always trying to find ways to ensure that, you know, the board is performing at its best. And the role doesn't just rest exclusively with me to do that. I work with the board chair and always trying to find ways to ensure that the board is operating at 100% or 110%.
That's a great one. One piece of advice that you'd give your 18-year-old self.
Oh, okay.
And Charles, just you were top 40 under 40, I believe, at one point.
Yeah,
gave yourself some good advice.
So you definitely, you were probably full of pretty good advice at 18. So this will be interesting.
I'd probably say something that I've practiced all my life, but you know, it's be patient and really try to ensure that I can mentor people that I work with, and also, you know, also be prepared to have other people provide me advice and suggestions. And my whole career has been, I'd say I've been really lucky in the roles that I've had, and I'm really lucky in the role that I currently have. But, you know, my success has been really dependent on having a good team surrounded by a good team and good people.
Oh, that's a good one. And the last question is something that you have purchased for under $1,000 that's changed your life recently.
Oh, wow. For me, it'd be a pair of running shoes.
Ah, that's a good one.
Hey, sounds that might be mine too.
It'd be several pairs of running. Yeah, I think I took up running probably seriously. And like, I don't do any kind of marathons or half marathons anymore. I just don't, my body can't stand it. But I think I've been running since 1997 on a regular basis.
Wow.
Other than maybe when I've had an injury, and I've done 3 marathons and I can't remember how many half marathons. And I did a sprint triathlon a couple of years ago, which I really enjoyed. I'm not a great swimmer, but I really enjoyed doing those 3 activities.
Right.
It doesn't cost anywhere near $1,000, but you know, $200 pair of running shoes. And that's really been my salvation in terms of just maintaining good health and doing something that, you know, helps me de-stress at the end of a day.
Right.
I feel like my comment about me as well is now like, saying to Wayne Gretzky, like, we're both hockey players. I started running around my block about 3 weeks ago.
Matt was going to ask you for your Strava username, but I think he's going to avoid that now.
Well, thanks so much, Charles, for taking the time today. That was a really interesting conversation, and I hope if new normal or old normal, I hope we're back to seeing people in restaurants and shopping downtown as soon as possible.
Yeah, likewise.
And Charles, how can people find out more about Vancouver Business Improvement Association?
Go to our website, dtvan.ca.
Perfect. Well, thanks again, Charles, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Okay, thanks a lot. I enjoyed it.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with the president and CEO of Downtown Vancouver's Business Improvement Association, Mr. Charles Gauthier.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Charles Gauthier, Matt, and interesting guy. A lot of insightful comments about the downtown business market and what's happening and how you can help, of course. And I don't know. I mean, it's a tricky time, but I'm optimistic.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting.
you know what? I meant to actually bring this up. I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but I actually was thinking about it in the introduction. I have a friend who works for a large hotel downtown, and they have furloughed almost their entire staff. He's one of the few people still in the office.
Right.
But it is one of the largest hotels. And what he said to me last time I spoke with him was they are treating this as if they are opening a new hotel. They're in the process of opening a new hotel in a market that they know nothing about.
Hmm.
So that is how dramatic COVID-19 is for some of these thriving businesses that are longstanding in Vancouver. So there's challenges out there for sure, but yeah, opportunities as well. I mean, specifically, I like to think of that fewer cars, more walking, more cafes, more outdoor seating. I mean, I think this could go a long way in Vancouver.
And the silver lining as well is I think, you know, business is becoming more resilient and, hopefully, you know, adapting and overcoming and then better checks and balances in place for future crises, which are inevitably on their way. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I think you're right. Unfortunately, but great conversation. What else do we got before we go today? Adam, let's reiterate. We are hiring.
We are hiring. If you are a licensed agent or somebody about to get your license, or if you're a seasoned agent looking for a change, looking to be on a team, definitely get in touch with us.
Team Scalina Real Estate.
info@scalinarealestate.com. No, sorry. Actually, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
That's right.
Yeah. And Matt, we also want to talk to the potential buyers and sellers out there right now, because if you are thinking about listing your property, we can do what's called a comparative market analysis for you, let you know what we think your price is worth in this current climate. And yeah.
I mean, the fact is Evan Siddall's talking about the Canadian real estate market, which is a very broad, nebulous thing that doesn't make a lot of sense, right?
Sure.
What happens in Brandon, Manitoba is not what happens in Vancouver.
Right.
If you read that and you're thinking, maybe I want to find out a little bit more about what's happening with my place, submarkets are important. People that work in your area are important. Definitely get in touch. And we can definitely help.
Yeah, and even if you don't want to sell, even if you just want an update on what your home's worth, get in touch for sure. And if you are a buyer, Matt, we've got some phenomenal resources at our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Absolutely. We have the Livewire. That's our weekly newsletter that goes out, deal of the month. We got great stats that we send out every month. We also have that real estate research tool, Private Client Services.
Because Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information at your fingertips. It's free. It's available on our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And if you're looking for real estate in Vancouver and you're not using PCS, you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong, and we can help you with that. If you want to talk about that, or anything else, 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We also got that secret line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Maybe the fittest guy in Vancouver, to be determined when we see him again, which who knows when that's going to be.
Yeah, you know what? It's my fitness pal, though, following along.
He's the elliptical. Just blowing it up.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the only guy on Strava. I didn't even know Strava actually records elliptical. He's the only guy ellipticaling around the block. I think has he added wheels to his elliptical?
You know what? I'm not even sure how he's doing it.
Yeah.
But one thing I know is he hasn't left his house in 2 months.
yeah, exactly. He actually texted the other day. He has reached out. He was concerned about are people going outside to get groceries. We have the same phone, right? Like we can all. You see the same news, don't we?
Have a good week, guys. Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.
Hey, everyone.
Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.